guys, thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to support us, please go to patreon.com/FrightDay.
Five morning rituals, huh? By Tim. Is he good?
He's actually really good. And he's not condescending. Hi, Ghost.
Fright Day, I'm your host, Byron. And although a crisp cold is currently creeping across the continental United States, tonight, with your help, things are gonna get even more chilling. It's True Tales of Terror, Volume 7. I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Oh, hello.
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
Cold.
Yes.
Everyone's cold.
Or they've already frozen to death, and they're not cold anymore.
Kelly, what you doing over there?
Just getting our stuff ready.
Okay, so you weren't prepared.
Well,
I was just saying.
I'm utterly prepared. Do you see this? I've got 11 pages of notes typed up of listener stories.
You're inside right now.
Inside my house?
Yeah, yeah.
I am inside my house.
And you've got a big puffy jacket on.
Well, I mean, it's not a big puffy jacket. It's like a slim puffy jacket, but it's very warm, yes. Uh-huh.
Well, it's a winter's coat, and you're inside.
Yes.
All right.
It's very cold, you see, and I get chilled very easily. The funny thing is, we just got a car, and the car has remote start, but I can't figure out how to make it work. So I should be warm, but Okay. Instead I got chilled.
All right. You drink hot beverages?
I imbibe. No, I don't. I like ice water year round.
I can't.
Oh, I'm still drinking
and
ice water.
Dr. Pepper.
Warm Dr. Pepper, like the dad in Blast from the Past?
No.
He drinks warm Dr. Pepper?
Of course he does. Brendan Fraser's father.
Faja?
Kelly, tonight, what can we expect?
We have an incredible collection tonight. We have some stuff about black dogs. A tale that converts a skeptic into a believer. Hmm. We have a terrifying story from Australia. Phantom phone calls. We have a hooded figure.
Wow.
And then probably my favorite, which is lengthy but spectacular, we have an alien abduction story.
Oh, wow. And these are all stories provided by the listeners of this program.
Yes.
It's a segment we call True Tales of Terror. Sam, why do we call it that?
I wrote this down last...
Okay, God, this is a nightmare.
I wrote this down last time.
I still have a cold, I'm sorry.
I forgot.
Oh, because they're true.
The veracity of these tales cannot be questioned.
Yes.
All right, Kelly.
All right, Byron.
Take the reins, huh?
You don't want me to confess my error on the last episode?
I'm fine with whatever.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I have a friend who is pretty big movie buff, and I respect his opinion about movies.
Don't respect mine.
Well, I respect his opinion about movies more than yours.
Oh, weird.
Okay. Yeah, but he sent me a message today because he's a faithful listener as well. And he said to me this. You need to see the other Yorgos Lanthimos movies before you say anything more about the killing of a sacred deer or Kubrick.
That's it?
Yeah. And then he went into a little bit more detail with me, says that this is something entirely different. And even though it does look a little bit like some of the Kubrick stuff, that he's completely his own beast. And
like who said? I can't remember who said that last week.
So it was pretty much what Byron said. The one thing that he said that was different is that he doesn't think that this guy's movies are meant to be funny at all, that they're all deeply sad.
And that just makes me a disturbed person.
Right.
And that's fine.
I think
well.
His phrase was, his movies are deeply sad in a plastic doll kind of way.
Sure.
Anyhow, now that he informed me of this, I feel like I need to apologize to you because I was probably a bit off point in my assessment last week.
Aggressively so.
Pretty aggressive. I was pretty aggressive.
Yeah,
so
I mean, I did clean it up a bit.
One of my New Year's resolutions is to work on my self-righteousness. So I am apologizing, Byron, for getting that wrong.
That's okay.
And now I'm going to go watch these other movies and then we can have a discussion, okay?
Fantastic. I can't wait. I'm very much looking forward to that.
And I have nothing to apologize to anyone for.
Well,
I don't apologize.
Well,
I like apologizing.
I like being right.
All right.
Lightning. No, I mean, I just usually add it myself.
Does she know? Does she know what that
is? It's like a Soulfly song.
It was like a sped up version of Jonathan Davis from Korn.
it was definitely some kind of nu metal.
Doing a bridge.
Was it? Was that a bridge?
Well, maybe.
Mm. This first story is about black dogs, and it comes from Dave. If you guys remember, we had an episode about black dogs a few weeks back, and this apparently inspired Dave to tell us his story. Here's his email. Hey, guys. Apologies for the comment length and for stopping the podcast midway through to type up this. Hey, Dave, just so you know, we don't know when you stop the podcast. You don't need to apologize for that.
I can definitely.
I bet he knows that, too. I'm a British guy, and black dogs are pretty much the only potentially supernatural phenomena that I have any kind of personal experience with. As you mentioned, they seem to crop up more commonly on this side of the pond, so I thought I'd share my tale. I really love that he said this side of the pond. I'm now 32, but as a callow youth... God, British people use so much better word choice. Oh, man. Yeah,
what about Sam over here?
I mean, Sam uses pretty good word choice. Sam's almost British. I'm now 32, but as a callow youth of 16 or 17, I would spend many evenings walking with my friends around the local woodlands. Said woods, see, that sounds like something Sam would say. Said woods had a large rocky outcropping nearby that was locally known as the Devil's Rock. Do you guys know why it's called the Devil's Rock?
Probably because of the local teen skinny dip there.
And the devil resides there.
The legend being that a shoe print-shaped indentation on the top of one of the large boulders had been left by the devil himself. A friend and I were walking along the path that led to the Devil's Rock one evening. It was summer, and while it was late in the day, it was still quite light. The little track had farmland on one side, separated from the track by a dry stone wall, and on the other some brush and foliage, until you got close to the rock where it fell away around 20 feet. As we approached the rock, there was a rustle in the foliage, and a huge black mastiff-type dog scrambled up onto the path and stopped there.
Aren't those nice?
I mean, it depends. All like, dogs can be
dogs
nice.
Are nice.
It's like a St. Bernard.
I mean, it is a black dog.
But fuzzier.
No, they're less fuzzy than a St. Bernard. Unless you're talking about a Tibetan mastiff, and then they're just giant fur balls.
Oh, these are big and scary. Never mind.
Yeah, I think that
this is the dog
in
the
omen.
Sandlot.
Oh.
Oh, shoot. My horror cred just fell right out that broken window. It's all for you,
Damien. And it's
Damien.
A Rottweiler.
There you go.
In the omen.
Yes. Well, actually, I think it points its mastiff, actually. I'm going to go ahead and argue that with you. Neither of us are scared of dogs, but this big boy froze us in place. It straddled the path and eyed us up for a good minute or so before scampering away back into the foliage. It wasn't unusual to see dogs on this path, but this wasn't one we'd ever seen before, and it had struck us both as odd. Not barking, approaching, or running away, just blocking our path. It also seemed odd that once we'd set off walking again, we saw no sign of an owner or anybody else for that matter. Last month, I went on a weekend away to Belgium with my two older brothers, 11 and 8 years older than me, respectively. And after a few Belgian beers in Antwerp's oldest pub, we got onto the topic of creepy stuff. Despite not really thinking it was anything other than an encounter with a scary dog, I related the story since it took place around a local landmark that had a spooky reputation. At this point, both of my brothers, neither of whom are prone to tall tales or of particular interest in the supernatural, nodded and interrupted to tell me their own separate stories of an encounter with a large, sinister-seeming black dog up on the same track up to Devil's Rock. Curiously, neither of them seemed at all surprised that I had a similar story to tell. Considering our age differences, I'd estimate that these sightings would have taken place over the space of at least 15 years, which I guess means it could have just been the same grumpy-ass dog that lived nearby. But would you really let your huge, intimidating dog roam free on a path frequented by ramblers and dog walkers? Hmm. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Dave, that story?
Oh,
I love it.
Great story.
I love it. You know, I love these stories that are just small. It's nothing earth-shattering, but especially when they're backed up by other people. That's the kind of thing that you two can't argue with.
No, I'm not going to argue with it. And, I mean, a person who has a mastiff has invested in that dog, you know, definitely financially.
Very expensive.
Probably emotionally, you know, if you're a good person as well. But this isn't just a creature that, you know, you would happen on left to its own devices.
Yeah, they aren't like the feral dogs of Brazil or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Did you say this rock was by Sutherland? Of South Dorset?
I love the names of places
in
the
UK. Is that true or not?
Probably.
I mean, there's something called the Devil's Anvil at that location. So I feel like it's a different thing owned by the devil.
Well, the devil probably owns a lot of things, wouldn't you say?
He's pretty well diversified in the real estate market.
All right. Great listener, Lacey. We love you. She sent us those awesome keychains, remember?
Yes.
Yeah, and it wasn't a bribe for me to tell her story. Her story is legitimately great on its own.
Okay, well, but if you do want to send stuff as a bribe.
I mean, that's fine.
That's fine. It's fine.
Can't promise that we'll be swayed. So, Port Arthur. It's a really beautiful World Heritage site near Eagle Hawk Neck, Tasmania. It was a 19...
Did you say Eagle Hawk Neck?
Eagle Hawk Neck.
That is... awesome.
It was a 19th century penal colony on the Tasman Peninsula and has some of the most beautiful old buildings that I've ever seen outside of Europe. There are heaps of horrific things that happened here when it was a prison, and there are a few islands in the bay that house hundreds of people who passed away on site. It was one of the first jails that switched from physical punishment to psychological punishment. A pretty awful place. In 1979, it became a tourist site, and in 1996, it was the site of the worst post-colonial massacre in Australian history. There's a small memorial on site to recognize those that lost their lives, but other than that, they don't really talk about it much as they don't want to make the murder famous or exploit the dead. Byron, are you familiar with this murder?
Wait, what was it one more time?
1996 massacre at Port Arthur.
You know I'm not.
Whoa. Okay, this is Lacey. There are actually some really interesting conspiracies around the massacre that involve the prime minister and gun control laws.
Wow. 35 deaths, 24 non-fatal injuries.
Okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and say Byron and I are going to have to do a lengthier episode. This sounds like a perfect opportunity for a team up of Captain Kelly and Byron's Serial Corner, because Byron can talk about the horrific murders and then I can talk about all the horrible ghosts there.
Perpetrated by Martin John Bryant. Give me a fiver. I mean, not for that,
but for us doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very good. Okay.
He's got surfer hair. This is going to be fun.
Lacey, thank you. You're the best. This is amazing. See, I think he looks like a straight up creepy cult leader.
I know. I didn't say his face.
Has significant intellectual disabilities.
He does look like he has a tough time in the head.
Yes.
I don't know that that's a nice way to put it.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Well, I mean.
Okay.
Sorry.
They run a ghost tour every night, and that was where I had my spooky experience. My husband and I were on our honeymoon in Tassie. That's awesome that it's called Tassie. And because he is wonderful, he agreed to go on the ghost tour with me, even though we were super jet lagged from our long trip from the States. I've heard amazing things about this ghost tour and was really excited about it. Unfortunately, I only made it about 10 minutes into the tour. We were in front of one of the ruins on site, and the tour guide was just explaining to us what we were going to see, sharing some history of the site. I got a very weird feeling. A wave of heat washed over me, and my stomach was flip-flopping. I turned to my husband and said I wasn't feeling well and that I wasn't sure if I wanted to continue the tour. He said I was just being silly and to enjoy the tour. We entered the remains of one of the churches on site, and the guide was explaining to us how this church burned down when the site was still a prison and several people perished. He also told a story about a particular inmate who was very troublesome and was always getting the lash. And then he reformed and was put on rebuilding the church duty. While on this duty, he very casually put an axe through the head of one of the other inmates. As soon as he said this, I felt a rush of heat and had a splitting pain in my head. A few moments later, I woke up on the ground in my husband's arms and the entire group was staring at me. I was very confused, and the kids that had been on the tour were all crying. I was super embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed. No shame, Lacey. No shame. Okay. My husband picked me up and escorted me to the car, and we went back to the hotel. I felt really weird until we left the historic site area the next day. Since this trip, I've had a similar experience on a ghost tour in New Orleans, but thankfully didn't faint this time. In October 2017, my husband and I took my parents to Tasmania while they were visiting us. One of the places they wanted to see was Port Arthur. I was a little worried about going back, but figured it would be fine during the day. As soon as we got there, I started getting hot and cold flashes, and as we walked near the church, my stomach was flip-flopping again, and I kept feeling like there was someone behind me. We wandered through the asylum and a few other places, but I couldn't shake the feeling. As soon as I left the area, I felt better. I'm not really one to believe in ghosts, but I definitely believe in evil, and I can certainly say that there is something evil at Port Arthur. To be continued in a collaboration episode between Byron Serial Corner and Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Yeah, wow. I mean,
how have we not done that?
Yikes.
I didn't think that I could find a massacre that you didn't know about.
Listen, I mean, she stated in her story that they try not to talk about.
I'm just saying, those are the ones that you pride yourself in knowing about.
I guess. I mean,
Byron's more of a serial killer guy.
This
than
is a spree.
Mass shooting.
Yeah.
I guess.
Boy, that was not a... I don't know how to better express that, but
you know,
the way I said it was not good.
I've gotten used to it, so I wouldn't worry too much. Yeah, Lacey, thank you so much for that story. That's
yeah, thanks, Lacey. That was great.
Sorry about the faint.
Yeah, that's scary.
Not great for you. It was a great story.
It was a great story. This is the hooded figure from our listener, Gabby. I have a pretty spooky tale from just a few weeks ago, and this was written earlier in the fall, just so you know. So it was, you know, a few months ago at this point. I still don't quite know what to think about it. It's a long one, so buckle up. Feel free to shorten the story. I'll leave that part out.
You didn't. You just read it.
I know. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm 16 years old and recently started dating my current boyfriend, who we'll call Jacob. He doesn't want his real name used.
Come on, Jacob.
Come on, buck up, buddy.
It's Rick. Come on, Rick.
Jacob/Rick and I were hanging out with a few of my friends that night. We met up with Lizzie and Caleb, also not their real names. We appreciate our anonymity. Okay, so we met up with Lizzie and Caleb at around 8:45. We got Starbucks and climbed up onto the roof of some local building. We were sitting up there for a few minutes when Caleb brought out some weed. Uh-oh.
Okay, now I get why.
I didn't get high, but my two friends and boyfriend were pretty far gone.
Sure.
We got pizza and were planning on sleeping over at Lizzie's house, but her babysitter had just gotten to her house.
Oh, hey, I'm just going to pause for a second. That pizza tasted so good.
Here, I'm just going to say, I believe Gabby. I used to hang out with people that smoked all the time, and I didn't, so I believe this. We got pizza and were planning on sleeping over at Lizzie's house, but her babysitter had just gotten to her house. We weren't supposed to sleep over, so we had to wait for the babysitter to go to bed. Caleb went with some of his other friends, and Lizzie went back to her house. So my boyfriend and I decided to go to the beach while we waited. Great idea. I love the beach. There were two pavilions right near the front entrance that were used for smaller events and had a capacity of around 100 people. The two pavilions both had events going on at that time, a wedding on one side and a bat mitzvah on the other. We walked over to the rock jetty that stretched out into the water between the two pavilions and sat about 10 feet before the sand became water, listening to the parties just behind us, the waves in front of us. It was about 10 p.m. when I looked over my right and saw a man walking in the sand in front of us, dressed in black pants and a black sweatshirt with a hood over his head. He had his hands in his pockets and I could vaguely hear him muttering to himself under his breath. His head was down and I could see his hunched back heaving with every breath.
It was Byron listening to The Used in high school.
There we go. I pointed him out to my boyfriend, who acknowledged that he saw the man but didn't seem worried. I don't know what it was about the situation, but I immediately felt uneasy. I assumed he would just walk across the jetty rocks and continue walking to the left of the jetty, but after he stepped onto the rocks, I could no longer see him. My eyes searched to my left and I saw no sign of him. I looked back to the jetty and could vaguely make out his figure walking right towards us. Frightened, I tapped my boyfriend and pointed to the man, but he still didn't seem concerned. As we were both looking at the hooded figure, we noticed him begin to run on the jetty. See, like, this is terrifying.
Yeah.
My heart began racing and my head spun as adrenaline flooded my body. I jumped off of the rocks, pulling my boyfriend with me. I screamed at him to run as we landed in the sand and scrambled to get to our feet. We took off towards the top of the beach and I made the dumb mistake of looking behind us. I turned my head and could see the man racing towards us. He seemed to fly across the sand, arms swinging wildly. We got to the top of the beach and he was still right behind us, so Jacob flung open one of the beach house gates, sprinted across their yard, and we were both screaming our heads off. There were still footsteps running behind us, so we took a sudden sharp left into an alleyway on the side of the house. We ran directly into a basketball court surrounded by chain link fence, a dead end. Oh my god. This is like a movie. Tears were streaming down my face and I was trying to make as little noise as possible. Miraculously, Jacob found a hole in the fence and we squeezed through just as we heard footsteps rounding the corner into the alleyway. We rolled out of the bushes and into the middle of a well-lit, crowded street. We were covered in sand, bloody from the prickly bushes we had just blazed through. My hair was a mess, and I was dripping with sweat. I hugged Jacob tighter than I've ever hugged anyone in my life. As we realized that we were finally safe, we began hysterically laughing. Our hearts were racing, and we looked like crazy people, but we were thankful we had escaped with our lives.
I mean, you're not safe.
Our ride was supposed to pick us up from the front entrance of the beach, so we decided to just go back and wait up near the pavilions. We reflected on what had just happened and we both couldn't believe how absurd it was. We walked up to the front of the beach, terrified to take a step on the sand. Instead, we walked up the steps to the pavilion where the bat mitzvah was. Several bored kids around our age were sitting outside near the steps, so we began talking to them. They could see that we were visibly shaken and asked us what had happened. We relayed the story the best we could, scaring the absolute shit out of these four kids.
Okay, come on now.
They told us that they had been sitting out there on the steps for the last 2 hours, facing the entrance to the beach, and the man didn't sound like anyone they had seen. And they swore that if they had seen anyone like that, they would have remembered. The six of us kept talking until our ride showed up, trying to come up with possible explanations. The hole in the chain link fence was much too small for the hooded figure to fit through, and we weren't aware of any other holes along the fence. The six of us searched up and down the beach looking for any possible way that the man could have gotten out and couldn't find anything. We were all seriously creeped out and jogged back to the front entrance, glancing behind us as we could. standing on the sand at midnight, staring into the pitch black of the beach, knowing that the hooded man could still be out there, anywhere, was the most unnerving moment of my life thus far. I haven't been able to drag myself back to the beach at night, and I don't plan on going back ever again.
I would like to be hanging out at a beach right now.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, it's too cold.
I don't know. This is pretty creepy.
Well, of course it's creepy. It's a startling man in a black hood, heaving as he breathes.
It's pretty creepy. Scares the heck out of me. It's a really good story. It's a really, really good story.
Just so you know, you're never safe, though.
Oh, never. Of course not.
He's still out there.
All right, guys. We've got an interesting story here. And this is from a listener named Jody, who actually, ironically, told her story in quite a bit of detail. And from her story ensued a really cool investigative journalism episode. There's a podcast called Reply All, which is a pretty cool podcast.
Very,
you guys.
Popular.
Very popular.
Very good.
Yeah, it is very good. It's very well produced. It's almost like Byron produced it or something.
Right. Relax.
You guys should check out the episode Reply All podcast from Gimlet Media. The episode is Case of the Phantom Caller. It came out in September, so you guys should go check that out. But here's a quick summary, because Jody reached out to us and I wanted to include part of her story in this. So Jody starts getting these phone calls. We all get calls from numbers that, you know, we don't recognize.
All the time.
Lots of telemarketing these days. I've noticed.
People are trying to get me to change my credit card processing company.
People are always calling me, offering me business loans. And I'm like, I don't want a loan. I never applied for a business loan. Go away.
Sam, what do people offer you?
I'd rather not talk about it.
So this woman starts getting a ton of calls, and she's noticing that there are these weird things in the background. So she'll hear, it'll sound like people are at a sporting event of some sort, or it'll sound like little kids playing.
It's 22, Mom.
And some of these go to voicemail. And when they go to voicemail, she starts listening. Recordings are, again, from these people that she doesn't know. They're almost like butt dial situations, but she has no idea what the hell's going on. So she saves a bunch of these recordings, sends them on to these guys at Reply All to see if they can figure out what the heck is going on. Well, they start digging, and they dig and dig and dig and dig and dig, and they find a solution. But before we talk about the solution, I want you guys to hear some of these creepy calls.
Yeah, that's not going to be any problem. They will take care of that also, and they are used to that.
Okay, so obviously some of them are creepy and some of them are just weird, but if you're getting tons and tons of these, you're going to start to worry about what the heck's going on. Is somebody gaslighting me? What's going on? What is this? This is very weird.
It could be NSA.
It's funny you mention that, because Jody, at one point, she felt really silly, but as they're interviewing her for Reply All, she says, is the government using my phone to, like, listen in to people? Am I accidentally getting wiretapped conversations forwarded to me? Like, what the hell's going on? Well, it actually took quite a bit of digging, but the fellas behind the Reply All podcast finally came across a gentleman in Santa Barbara who was recording tons of these, and he had heard. Okay, why do the ghosts always come out when I'm talking?
I don't know. We didn't get a ghost meter spike, so I don't really know what that was.
Okay, I gotta gather myself again. That kind of freaked me out. All right.
That's a good one.
A little spooked. Little bit spooked. Okay. Okay.
We were talking about the gentleman who also was receiving these calls.
Right, and he started collecting them. He had, I think, 10,000 recordings or something like that. He was trying to work and figure out what was going on. Well, he was tracking the traffic of these numbers that were calling, and he figured out that beneath this, and you guys being Sam and Byron at the moment, please note that when there is a logical solution for a spooky tale, I am more than happy to bring that solution forward, which is exactly what I'm doing here. This company had come up with this really ingenious scam. If you can call and connect to a 1-800 number for even a couple of seconds, there's a small amount of money that's gained from that. What they were doing is dialing hundreds of thousands of 1-800 numbers on repeat and using these messages to get people to stay on the phone a little bit longer so that they could try and figure out what the hell was going on, mm-hmm. essentially scraping the money from these transactions for these very teeny tiny calls. The common denominator was all the people that were receiving the calls had 1-800 numbers, so they were using like data systems or other ways to connect to phone calls rather than just a normal phone provider.
Sure.
And that's how they were getting these calls, because they had ended up on a list of somebody with a 1-800 number that these people were trying to scam and get a lot of money out of. If you have a 1-800 number and somebody calls you, please be sure to hang up right away, because you're just providing money to scammers, as it turns out. You guys should definitely listen to the entire Reply All podcast episode on this, because it's really fascinating. It actually reminds me of kind of the way like Radio Lab will play out. Yeah. It's a cool story.
It's number 104, The Case of the Phantom Caller, one more time.
Super fun. So this spooky story from Jody did have a resolution. I thought it was very interesting.
But yeah, thanks. Jody sent me that right before the episode aired, and yeah. I was actually very excited.
It is really cool. Yeah, very I agree. Cool. This is... I'm going to go ahead and say the coolest story that I've received.
Well, you're just going to
in the entirety.
Everyone else, your stories were garbage. Garbage.
Everybody's stories have been fantastic. You guys will understand why I love this one. The gentleman who sent it, his name is Adam. He actually posted the story in Week in Weird. Okay. Weekinweird.com has some fun stuff on it. And rather than trying to paraphrase and butcher his awesome story, I'm just going to read it verbatim because it's really, really well written. The leap from believability to impossibility has been traversed many times over the course of man's existence. We've walked on the moon, or have we? Okay, and split relax. The atom. Such things once deemed impossible, a little more than flights of fancy.
When is moon month?
February.
Oh, no.
We should keep such words as impossible as far away from our lips as we can, because science has shown us that we don't know what we don't know. Thank you very much, cryptids and conspiracies.
It's April, by the way.
Well, we're doing it in February this year.
Absolutely.
The very idea of impossible is a bit of a disease when it comes to such things as truth and reality. Couldn't agree more, Adam. It's at this time that I'd like to go on record and say that I don't think every blurry picture taken in the woods is a Bigfoot. I don't think every light photographed in the sky is a UFO, and I don't think every log in the river is a long-lost relic of prehistory. That being said, I know this. Aliens are real, and furthermore, they have been here. You guys hear that?
What?
You guys get that memo?
No,
You guys get the memo from Adam?
Yep.
I didn't.
The story is so freaking cool. Okay.
Okay. Relax.
Now, before you jump to conclusions and have me locked up in an institution, don't worry, I would never do that to you, Adam. I know that the statement is inflammatory, and some would even say far-reaching, but the truth is, I've been given a type of proof that in and of itself is wholly unfounded, but it led to the type of aha moment that we all wish we could have, and recently led me to a bit of revelation that some might find unsettling. So let me tell you this the best way I can, and instead of boring you with an interview, I'll entertain you with a story.
Thanks, Adam.
One that you may have heard before, but when you hear it this time, I think you'll agree that it's very pertinent. I'd also like to clarify that while I am a storyteller, this is an accurate, honest, and unbiased as I can be representation of the truth. The instances I'm covering, for the most part, didn't happen to me and are therefore third party, but by the end of this story, you'll understand why I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are not alone in the universe. Simon says, the first incident. When I was a boy, around 1985, my father began sharing a very scary story that he swore was true. It was the type of story you might have seen on The Outer Limits, but what he had to say had such ramifications about our place in the universe that many people chose and still choose not to believe him. I am not one of those people, though I admit I originally was. See, Sam, believers can come forth from doubters, so there's still hope for you.
Belief is for cowards.
And Sam has always said he wants to believe.
I do.
You don't want to believe as much as me and Mulder do, but whatever.
I don't want to believe badly enough to suspend disbelief.
All right. My father's name is Carl Moore. His rank was that of an airman second class in the Air Force, and he had top secret clearance. His main duties were to guard boxes in a warehouse, which, by his own account, was the most boring job anyone could have. It was the type of mind-numbing job that seems prevalent in the government sector, and my dad loathed it, but it was his duty. When I asked him what was in the boxes, he flatly said, "I never asked what was in the boxes." This is the type of officer he was. I would make the worst officer.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely you would.
Terrible oh my God.
Officer, but for some reason you think you're a captain?
Well, yeah.
You'd be a worse enlisted. You would be a terrible officer and just and at command. Oh my
God. But I'm the best captain. This incident happened around September 7th, 1965 at Pease Air Force Base. He's more sure about the day of the week it happened on than the actual date because if you got all of your work done early on Thursday, you could have Friday off, and my dad loved three-day weekends.
Everyone
you
got all the box Friday. Guarding done on Thursday.
Yeah, apparently. The date should ring a bell for many because it's only a few days after the incident in Exeter. You guys know about the Exeter incident? We haven't talked about it on the podcast yet.
I don't think we have. I know there's a movie called Exeter.
I don't think it's the same thing. I think that one's like a ghost demon thing.
Yeah.
So this happened just south of Exeter, New Hampshire in 1965. There was a series of UFO sightings, and one of them became most famous, involving a boy and two police officers. Pretty creepy. Air Force investigated, et cetera, et cetera. The Air Force released one story, and then they recounted it. Standard Air Force procedure. Part of my father's duties was taking shipments off the railhead, and many of the other airmen didn't like going down to the railhead. It was at this railhead that a craft appeared. It was off in the distance, and he tried to copy what he saw by drawing it on a small sheet of paper. Before he could finish it, the craft was directly above his head. It was close enough that he couldn't see the sky because it took up the whole of his view. So think about that. Okay, it's that so huge.
Every time that happens, I have trouble believing because at that point, it's big enough that so many people could see it.
It's all related to how
close it is
to the ground, right?
As well.
So if it's close to the ground, it wouldn't take something. So like if I'm standing like this.
All right, into the mic.
If I'm standing like this, it would take something this big to cover
that's
up my
head. Will you gesture louder, please?
Oh my God, I hate you guys. Have some respect.
I am, but like if a
both of you.
If a kiddie pool is like 5 feet above your head, it could be like a 50-foot wide thing. Three times as high as that. You
right,
know?
Exactly. So it doesn't have to be that huge.
Well, it could.
So I'm just arguing.
It's big,
with you.
Though.
Right, it's big, but it doesn't have to be giant. Just has to be close.
Remember last time you argued?
I know, but I will tell you that I really feel much more confident arguing about UFOs with you.
All right.
Okay, here we go. This is where you guys are going to start really losing your minds.
I'm getting ready.
When he gasped at the sight of the sudden appearance of the ship,
holy mackerel,
he heard the ship repeat the phrase verbatim and in his own voice. Now, see, that seems logical to me. He tried to run, but the ship stayed over him. Hearing them repeat his further exclamations, he decided to face the vessel and said, "If you can copy that, try copying this."
And it
he pulled
back.
A card from his pocket, and to his surprise, the ship opened. He was expecting it to be a slot to put the card in, but what really happened caught him even more off guard as the ship's entryway opened up and the occupants exited. They grabbed him and touched a wand to the back of his head, and he no longer struggled. As he was taken aboard, his commanding officer told him that the visitors had been around for years and that they were interested in testing us. He claimed that they weren't going to hurt him and that this was, in fact, a pretty regular situation. Okay, so this all does align perfectly with what has been claimed about Eisenhower.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Were they speaking to him in his own voice as well?
So it says his commanding officer.
Wait,
so
who was in the ship?
I think his commanding officer, so like an actual military guy, and aliens.
Okay.
Okay.
They were in the ship together?
Well, listen. This was the first time he was taken aboard, and his visit was comprised almost totally of medical examinations. These were the typical grays, which were actually broken down into two types. One, a worker class, and the other are bosses. The larger bosses were smarter. Both of them, he said, had eyes like us, only their pupils were so large that you couldn't see the whites. He described their forehead like a melon, a small hole for their ears, and a walnut-shaped feature immediately behind that hole. He says that when they communicated with him, it was with thought, and it seemed as if they were purposefully flooding his mind with images to hide what they looked like, but that he was able to ignore what they were saying.
We're not talking melon heads, like the urban legend in Michigan, Ohio.
The melon head thing slightly resembles the Dover demon, too, but no, that's not what we're talking about. Okay. He's basically saying they look like your standard grays.
Still wearing the puffy coat.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, it's cold.
All right, I know. It's chilly. It's frigid.
Yep.
And when frightening.
When he talks about them, it's with both reverence and fear. He also got the feeling that they don't like to be touched, and when I asked him what gave him that idea, he said the most peculiar thing. We could just all of a sudden go effing nuts on them and kill them. They're just the same as we are. I mean, flesh and bone. You know what I mean? If I was them, I'd be afraid of us. I'd be scared to death of us. He was gone the entire weekend.
Do you think aliens
have bones? So here's the thing, guys.
Only one way to find out.
I still think that the most logical theory is that these are dimensional travelers, not space travelers, and that they're probably us. So let's just keep talking.
You would imagine. You're saying yes.
They're just
on the bones.
Yes. Yes. The next segment of his story is called The Green-Skinned Woman and Strawberry Ice Cream. The visitations happened with enough regularity that he was eventually left lucid during them. He eventually described a third type of being that was a female with green skin. Her eyes were different in shape than the grays, having a more almond shape to the grays' teardrop shape. He describes her having bright red, straight pubic hairs.
All right. So, thanks for tuning in, folks.
Gathered around her were young ones that looked nothing like her, though my father says she claimed them as her own. He enjoyed her company, and when he talks about her, it's almost like that of a person who misses a good friend. Her arms didn't seem very functional. And she asked if he would feed her. She gave him a push-up of strawberry ice cream, and he would hold it for her to eat.
I love push-ups.
Listen to this. This is crazy, guys. On his account, she was very pleasant to talk to and told me if you met her, you would like her. She was very smart. Another being looked like a Nordic human.
Yes.
He looked very old, but my dad got the feeling that he was the one in charge. All of the others seemed to show respect for him. Unlike the others, he spoke with his mouth and not telepathy. The entire conversation with the Nordic led my father to believe that the man was extremely old, possibly 90, but at one point the Nordic stood up and revealed a rather athletic and muscular body. Even more surprising was that the Nordic then led my father into a room where others were gathered. The number of different species was staggering, but my father claims that the Nordics made up at least a quarter of them. Here we are, unable to be civil toward one another based on ethnicity, religion, and region, and yet the rest of the galaxy is not only learning to coexist, but they've made it the status quo. Very good point, Adam. There was more to be discovered. After further testing, it was discovered that my father had what was called behavior disorder, a disorder which they believed may have been the reason for his ability to black out their telepathy. In short, the right and left side of his brain doesn't communicate well with each other. Basically, schizophrenia, something my father was officially diagnosed with years later. Yeah, don't start getting judgy, guys. Hear this out. This revelation has no bearing on my believing that his story is true because the corroborating evidence didn't come from him, but more on that later. Glad you inserted that there, Adam, because these guys were just starting to check out. So I'm really glad you
We were squirming a bit.
It's just the short attention span. It's a good story. It's well written, too.
There comes a point when these beings have gotten the information from him that they've desired and are basically trying to get a better understanding of his reasoning and learning abilities. It was during this time that things became rather unique in the abduction experiences, or at least as far as abduction experiences go. My father asked them what the smallest particle in the universe was. It was a question that he noticed got an immediately different response than anything he'd asked previously. That response was an eagerness to share, not unlike that of a religious person's desire to respond to questions about their faith. The aliens, all of them, had a religion of sorts because they believed that the smallest particle was a living organism, and since it made up the whole of the universe itself was alive. They were anxious to share what physical makeup of the particle was, but viewing it was tricky because it only revealed itself when the observer was in the right state of mind. This feat wasn't easy because of my dad's behavior disorder, but he says that they were determined to show him the particle nonetheless. What followed next was an introduction to a bizarre ritual that included his viewing of other particles and giving an emotional response to them. I liken this to the Tibetan monk's ability to recognize all the facets of themselves, their anger, greed, jealousy, love, happiness, hatred, and so on. Recognizing and accepting them until that moment when you basically invite the particle to show itself. Once it did, my father says that the moment made him feel complete and understanding of everything, something I believe he struggles with to this day.
Enlightenment.
Yeah, pretty much. He did not hit rainbow body, though, I'm glad to hear. The tiniest detail. Okay, you guys listen up. This is very cool.
I'm
listen up. You two listen.
Thinking about rainbow body.
Please listen. The memories of these events haunted him for 20 years after the fact. He wanted to discuss them, but says that he swore not to say anything for 20 years. It was an oath he took just as seriously as his job guarding boxes in a warehouse all those years ago. 1985 rolled around, and he was eager to share his experiences with everyone. To his dismay, many of his friends scoffed at the notion, thinking he was either fooling with them or downright nuts. He admits his own sanity is fleeting, but always stuck to those events. Not because they made him feel special, but because he thought the world should know the details. Because even though the situation was scary, there were moments when it made him feel better that our world was part of something bigger. There were certain details that made many of his friends disbelieve his story. Most specifically was the idea that aliens eat strawberry ice cream. I mean, of all things for aliens to eat, strawberry ice cream sounds rather silly.
I mean, there's so many other flavors.
At least it's not vanilla.
I mean,
well, all things
vanilla's okay. Great.
I take offense
to that.
It's a
creamy, delicious,
you know what,
ice cream in its most...
If you don't let me keep reading this story. While all things considered, in fact, it was the detail that I used to think was silly as a kid, and honestly, the one thing that made me think my dad might be a liar. Then 1988 rolled around. It was a rather important year for me. It was Cincinnati's bicentennial. I got to play Cincinnatus in the third grade play about how he rose from station of farmer to emperor in order to fend off the barbarian invaders. Any child of the 80s and 90s also knows that the television was flooded with shows about UFOs. In 1988, a show aired on Fox called UFO Cover-Up Live.
Tonight, for the first time in history, men and women from all over the world come together via satellite to share their experiences about unidentified flying objects. Live from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., LBS presents, in association with Seligman Productions, UFO Cover-Up, Live.
You can find it on YouTube pretty easily. It was an hour and a half long documentary that discussed everything from UFOs to the biology of their occupants. There were anonymous panelists, scientists, UFO investigators, alien abductees, and it was all hosted by Mike Farrell of MASH. It's interesting about the context in which some of the information was displayed because at the end, they seemed to make light of the close encounter experience. One panelist, James Oberg, makes a joke about how we should all go out and buy strawberry ice cream because maybe if it's all gone, the UFO guy will go away. I was watching the show with my dad. There was no way he contacted them about that small and silly detail. That show, regardless of what it was trying to accomplish, turned me into a believer, all because of its inclusion of the strawberry ice cream. It's such an obscure element that the inclusion to it in so many encounter stories, enough so that it was mentioned on national television, made me realize that whatever my dad experienced was real. That's not the end of his story, however. The other day, while I was trying to figure out the best way to approach this subject, it dawned on me that not everyone likes strawberry ice cream. In fact, not everyone likes ice cream. What are the chances that so many of the visitors like the dessert enough to eat it in front of their abductees? What if it isn't but one? One quirky female interested in the test subjects that her ship has brought aboard, interested in knowing them personally, if for no other effect than to be a friendly face in what was surely a most terrifying experience. We may never know her name, but she made a lasting impression. Isn't that the coolest story, guys?
Wow, huh.
Isn't that amazing?
That's definitely a different angle than one
Now, I didn't research this guy's history. I did send him an email and ask if his dad does interviews, because how cool would it be to interview him? Well, I would love it. Anyhow, what an amazing story. This guy is a very good writer. And I think that the information he puts in here was very helpful, both because it's, you know, convincing to you guys. It was convincing.
It was a great story.
You guys believe it now, don't you?
I want vanilla ice cream, if that helps.
I'll take some vanilla.
It was a great story.
Great story. Incredible story.
Very well told.
I understand the importance of the detail. I was actually looking back because I feel like strawberry ice cream was more popular in the 80s for some reason.
Well, they had the push-up pops, right?
Sure.
You still get those.
And people used to do Neapolitan a lot more then
as well. Oh, God, I miss it. I love Neapolitan ice cream.
I mean, a little bit of
everything. And you know I what have really been good, those Neapolitan ice cream sandwiches. Massacre.
What was that?
And I have been researching the Port Arthur Massacre.
Well, we've learned a lot tonight. We certainly have, from hooded men.
Black dogs.
Ice cream. Post-execution faintings.
Yeah.
Quite the night.
I love these spooky stories, and our listeners have experienced some really cool stuff. So here's my pitch to you two cabin boys.
No, you don't get to say that on this show.
You're right, your cabin fellas. Oh. If there are that many experiences among our listener group, which you guys say with great regularity are wonderful, wonderful people, if there are that many experiences among this group of listeners, how do you guys continue to doubt aliens and ghosts and spooky dogs? How do you doubt it all?
I think that there are prosaic explanations for all of it.
Wow. So you're just disrespecting all of us.
I'm not at all.
Completely.
Not at all what's happening.
I feel like that's disrespectful.
No, listen. Just because we don't believe something doesn't mean it doesn't exist or that things...
Disrespecting.
Okay. Thank you so much, guys. And thank you so much, Kelly, for reading those encounters.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, thank you guys for submitting those because it's a pain in the ass to write stuff down and send it to Kelly. I totally understand.
I really appreciate it because it shows your time and dedication to an important topic. And I think you all have incredible stories to share. So please continue to bring them forward. I do have one final story, which is ongoing. And I was debating whether or not I was going to share it tonight, but I think I am because our listener sent it in at the last moment. And I was thinking, gosh, maybe I should save it for the next one. But it's just too much fun. I can't leave it out. This listener experienced something incredibly recently, right? Her name's Caitlin, and this happened, let's see, 2 days ago.
Before the end of the year.
This is our converting a skeptic to a believer. So not unlike my own home situation, Caitlin's married to a gentleman who doubts everything, or at least doubts the paranormal things, it sounds like. So here's her story.
Clearly, she's better set up in life than if she was by herself.
I was in the kitchen making lunch in the afternoon. The sun was shining in the windows, reflecting off the snow, so it was quite bright. We're familiar with that. Snow brings a lot of light in, even in the middle of the night sometimes. Suddenly, I got this weird vibe, and moments later, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a black movement quickly dart across the kitchen window. I turned my head and didn't see anything, but I was sure something just ran by. I walked into the family room and said to my husband, "You're going to think I'm crazy, but I swear I just saw..." Before I could finish, he said, "A black shadow across the window?" My jaw dropped, and I asked him how he knew what I had just experienced. He said, "I see it all the time, but never wanted to say anything because I knew you'd freak out. I'm actually surprised you haven't seen it sooner. So the for sale sign is going up next week."
Really?
He's a skeptic, so I never thought he'd admit to seeing something that he can't explain, but even he admitted it creeps him out sometimes. Now, I did follow up with Caitlin. They are not selling their house, okay. But she is very spooked out by it.
Hyperbolic.
And she is going to, you know, continue to bring it up with her husband.
Wow.
I just think it's wonderful, and it gives me hope that really blind people can be converted into believers. So,
or that they need to get new neighbors because neighbors keep creeping around the outside of their house.
That's not it.
It could very well be. I mean, you guys had scary meth neighbors for a while.
Oh, yeah. I guess we did. Have you noticed that house is just like emptied now? It's really
it is.
Weird.
The bank owns it. There's a notice that says, "Do not trespass."
Oh, no.
Stuck up to the front door.
All right.
Yeah.
Clearly, I trespassed.
Well, that's a lot of fun. Caitlin, thank you so much for that last minute addition right under the wire. And it's a good
one. Yeah. Yeah. And fresh 2 days ago.
Wow. Well, Kelly, the fire's out.
Oh, is it time? Is it time to go?
It is time to go.
Okay.
One more time. If you have true tales of terror that you'd like to share, kelly@frightday.com. Let us know your opinions of these spooky stories. Tweet us at Frightday on Twitter, or you can leave a comment below this episode in the show notes at frightday.com. Let's talk about creepy things to get through this terrible season in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/frightday. Sam, we're on Instagram a little bit at Frightday as well. And if you like the show and want to help us make it even better, grab something, of course. It's all spooky at shop.frightday.com. Patreon. Sam, what's Patreon?
Patreon. Patreon.com/frightday is a place you can go to throw some of your hard-earned money our way, and it helps us keep doing what we're doing. And in return for that, we offer you some things like exclusive content, live
Kelly's
stream,
chocolate mousse
chats,
recipe,
and good things as well.
Sure.
And thank you for your support.
Most helpful of all, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Of course, that's the way we sneak into more ears. This person did just that. Lestat's fan. I think that's how you say it. Like the interview
vampire.
For a vampire. Yeah, there.
Interview in a vampire.
Inside of a vampire. Vampire.
Vampire.
A must for horror fans. 5 stars. I am picky about the horror I watch, so I love the movie reviews. I have found gems that I may have never seen or even been aware of, such as Creep and Creep 2. And Kelly does a great job in our cryptids and conspiracy segment. It's well-researched and entertaining. I love Byron's Serial Corner and need more of those segments. Sam keeps us all grounded. I save their podcast for my long run of the week, and I am very happy when the podcast goes an hour plus. I think this one's just maybe...
You hear that?
I do.
How do you like that, Byron? Does that just crush your soul?
It's fine. This is the first podcast I've ever monetarily contributed to because they're just that good. He or she must be a Patreon patron. If you are a fan of horror, this is a definite must. So thank you so much, Lestats fan. That really does mean a lot. So does your patronage.
That's amazing. Wow.
Kelly, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Kelly Fright Day. You can also email me, and please do, kelly@frightday.com.
I am at Sam Fright Day. Email me, sam@frightday.com. Instagram, sam_MiloDragovich.
So many syllables.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And there's been a severe lack of haunted things coming our way physically.
Yeah, send us your weird stuff. Creepy, kooky, odd. It doesn't have to be worth anything, but it's worth something to us. Fright Day, LLC, P.O. Box 372, Lolo, that's L-O-L-O, Montana, 59847.
And until next Fright Day, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Stay warm.
Why I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt.
This is, we're just on Facebook Live, or Instagram Live real quick.
Good God.
I thought it'd be fun to do one of the stories live.
Let me read my story!
Read your story and don't wake the children.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
You nut?